Welcome back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Hanging out with you until 8 o'clock. Tyler Zuli is producing, and we are now joined by one of my favorite guests. And we team up for Penn Football on the Ivy League on ESPN. He joins us now on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. He is Coffee Jones. Coffee, how is quarantine life treating you?
It's been pretty fine, Joe. I'm glad to be able to spend a little more time with my family. My daughter's been at school doing a lot of online schooling, some colleagues with high school. So being able to spend a little bit more time with her, being able to relax. And I do miss going to the gym, playing some basketball. You know, I'm a hoops fan, so that is one thing I do miss.
So it's so funny that you just brought that up now, Koff, because Slam Magazine just popped into my timeline with the time that Ricky Davis was one rebound shy of a triple-double and he shot at his own rim. You would never do anything like that, right, Koff? It's always team first.
It's always team first, but if we got the win, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. You got to get stats. I don't know what his contract was, so he might have needed that for a bonus to him.
Coffee, before we get into the NFL offseason, what the Eagles have done or haven't done, one of the things that we opened up the show with, and I'm sorry to spring this on you, but I wanted it to be spontaneous. We were talking about some of the greatest sports memories that you were physically there or present for, whether it was a game that you were playing in, a game that you were watching, you know, moments that made you more of or a better sports fan. Is there something that sticks out to you that you saw and it just gave you chills? You thought, wow, this is it, man.
I mean, definitely the height of it as a fan was being at Super Bowl 52 with the Philadelphia Eagles, going out there traveling with Jaws, one of my best friends, Mo Ruffins from the Arena League. We got to go to the game. We're sitting probably about 9 rows from the top of U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, but we still loved it, every minute of it, just seeing the crowd, seeing the competitiveness, seeing a guy like Tom Brady. Being from California, I've always respected and admired. He's had that, you know, that Kobe, Michael Jordan, Mamba mentality type, villain type of instinct, and to see him compete against the Eagles, a team that, you know, is where I live and it's kind of the hometown team for me right now, that was just an amazing experience. And then just to see everybody from Philadelphia coming back to this area, these lifelong fans and the people that are literally in tears and crying, you know, waiting for generations to see something like that happen, that was just unbelievable. And growing up, even as a young Raiders fan, the Raiders have left L.A. and came back and moved all over the place. Just to see these diehard, passionate fans here in Philadelphia, it really, really touched me as a sports fan in general.
Speaking with Coffee Jones here on the Comcast Business Hotline, obviously, even though the world is stopped, the NFL offseason, free agency, draft prep, all of that is big time underway at this point. Eagles very active in the early going with the Hargrave and Slay moves, but maybe people expected to see them pick up a wide receiver. That has not happened. What's your take on what the Eagles have done so far?
I actually like it. I think they went the beneficial route as far as the financial ramifications, the salary cap. When you look at some of the top wide receivers, especially when the free agency period opened, you've seen some astonishing numbers. You talk about Amari Cooper, 5 years, $100 million. He's one of the upper echelon guys. A.J. Green gets tagged. A lot of these guys end up staying with their teams and getting mega deals. Darius Slay was kind of the perfect fit. I mean, you can't ask for a better guy at the value that you got him at. We really didn't have to trade or give up any type of draft picks to get him. A guy that's kind of in the prime or just starting to hit the prime of his career. He's been in the Pro Bowl 3 times. He's been all pro. He's a guy that Jim Schwartz actually drafted when he was the head coach of the Detroit Lions. You know, a few years ago, he's a 4-3 guy coming out of Mississippi State. So he's a guy that can definitely play and be that lockdown corner. You've seen him match up against Hopkins, against Amari Cooper, you know, against the best receivers that you'll find in the league, Devontae Adams, year in and year out, game in and game out when he was with Detroit. Now the Eagles got that guy they can trust to put on the number one guy and not have to use a safety like McCloud or even Jalen Mills to kind of help over the top. You can trust him to make plays on his own.
Coffee, you mentioned Amari Cooper obviously getting the big deal from the Dallas Cowboys, who saw Byron Jones leave for a big deal in Miami. Still nothing done with Dak Prescott. Is your sense that Dallas has a plan? Because if they do, I'm having trouble seeing what it is.
You know, I think they have a plan. I don't know if it's one road. It's possibly two. I mean, Dak, look, you give him the franchise tag, and he can decide to gamble on himself yet again and play for it and try to maybe strike gold like Kirk Cousins did and play on a couple franchise tags. And, you know, he finally gets that fully guaranteed contract. So Kirk Cousins has made a lot of money over the last 5 years. If Dak can continue to play well, he may be in that possibility and that opportunity. But for right now, he's looking, from what I'm hearing from his camp, Edwards and those guys, to be the highest paid quarterback in the league, possibly of all time right now. And being the star quarterback of the franchise, is kind of the star of the NFL, no pun intended, he's kind of got the leverage to do that. So with Dallas, he could have the leverage over the team to say, hey, this is what I want, and I'm not showing up to camp. Now, the good thing for the team is, with this offseason being in limbo, with the draft, with these, you know, coronavirus crisis in the world right now, they've got a little more leeway to kind of wait things out. To, you know, you can see where Dak is not necessarily holding out a mandatory minicamp or these things that may be going on following the draft, to where nobody's going to be reporting. So it's not like Dak has the opportunity to hold out. But when you get closer into late July and August, things are going to start to heat up. I expect them to get a mega deal done. It's really going to strap them for the next couple of years. But if they're going to go with that combination of Zeke, Dak, and Amari Cooper, that's going to be their plan going forward. That's going to eat up a lot of their cap. And you'll start to see guys start to fall off of that offensive line and that defense that they can't afford to keep.
Dak's got to find Jared Goff's guy to draw up that contract because, holy smoke, that was the most ridiculous contract I think I've ever seen in the history of the NFL. Coffee, so you transitioned beautifully there, both into the draft and to the start of the season. So I guess I'll start with the start of the season. The president saying that he expects the NFL to get rolling kind of on time and on target, echoing what they themselves said earlier in the week. It seems like, you know, unless they're lying, that is kind of the way that things are at least headed for the moment. Do you think that, from what you're hearing, you're a plugged in guy, do you think that's a target on time with fans in the stands? Is that something that's realistic based on what you're hearing, or is it kind of a wait and see proposition?
I think it is realistic. I think a lot of sports at this point in time, just looking at the fact that people are starting to get the picture a little bit more, staying home, allowing this, you know, flatten the curve type of mantra that has been going on, especially out here in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, to be able to keep people a little bit safer in their environment. I think the NFL is kind of in the best position out of any of the sports leagues because they technically don't start until the fall. So where leagues right now have to make those decisions, whether they're going to delay. The NBA's got a tough decision, whether they're going to condense, come back, name a champion, and do whatever. The NFL, a lot of their off seasons, they can pretty much do like we're going to do with the NFL draft without technically being there. The draft has been done for years and decades when it started just from a hotel room, a couple guys on the phone, and each team calling in from their city location, so that can continue to go on. Obviously, some of the rookie mini camps and some of those, you know, 2 or 3 day workouts that the teams would get, they're going to miss out on those opportunities, but you can still catch up with those once you hit into August and some training camp. Even then, you know, when you look at the new CBA, there's not a lot of padded practices. There's a lot of walkthroughs. There's a lot of, you know, mental rep type stuff that's built into these practices during the off season. So it's not like the guys are missing so much of that in-town, in-the-facility training that they're not going to have. I think they can pick up where they left off, still be able to put a quality product on the field as long as, you know, the government and everything gets situated and get things back on track.
Coffee, you hit on the rookie mini camps and workouts being kind of throttled back, and people are pointing to that as a reason why the NFL should start. I kind of look at it like, well, in any given year, it seems like there's only like 9 or 10 rookies that by the end of it that are making any kind of impact that really know what they're doing anyway. And it's going to be every first year is a learning process for rookies to begin with. So it sounds like you don't believe that that will be an insurmountable obstacle. Is that right?
I agree. I don't think it will. I mean, these guys have been waiting for this opportunity for so long. And just looking at the staffs, when I go through these rosters of just the coaching staff and the help they have for these guys in position coaches and personnel and consultants and all these different guys they have, strength and conditioning-wise, nutrition-wise, these rookies have so much of an opportunity to come in and hit the ground running coming off of their college season, their college career, that they're set up for success. Now, where they land, what they decide to do with their off season and their off time in their personal outside of the facility is what determines who's going to be the elite guys, who's going to make it to that second contract. Because again, a lot of these guys don't make it to that second contract. Of the first rounders, I've heard numbers as high as 30%. A third of the first round picks don't make it to that second contract. So those guys are considered somewhat bust in their careers. But you're looking at a guy that you're taking with your number one pick that's going to be a Pro Bowler, an All-Pro, potentially, you know, a legendary player for 8 to 10 years in your franchise. If that doesn't work out, that's up to the guy and the work that he's willing to put in on his own outside of the building.
Speaking with Coffee Jones here on the Comcast Business Hotline, that does bring us to the draft, and the big position of need, it seems, for the Eagles is that wide receiver position, even though Howie Roseman says that he's looking to add speed all over the roster. What's your take on the wide receiver classes? Who are guys that you like more than most, and maybe a guy that you like less than most?
Well, the guy that I like more than most is CeeDee Lamb, but unfortunately for Eagles fans, he's not going to be anywhere near anybody's board at 21 or even in the team. I don't think he'll get out of the top 10. Out of Oklahoma, we're talking a big, tall wide receiver. I kind of compare him when I watch him make 50-50 catches against teams like LSU and Texas that have been, you know, given the mantra of DBU, depending on, you know, what part of the country you're from. He's gone off against each of those teams for over 100 yards just this past season. He's a guy, I kind of compare him to a faster, more agile Dez Bryant. He can make those 50-50 catches in the Eagles. The biggest key for their season coming up is the health of DeSean Jackson. If DeSean Jackson is healthy, he's that speed threat that every team needs. You don't have to worry about reaching and stretching to get a guy like him, Henry Ruggs, who I know is a speed guy. You don't have to stretch. You can go get you a complete receiver. CeeDee Lamb is the guy that I love. I don't think he'll be there at that position. Justin Jefferson, I think that's personally, I think he may even be there after 21. So if you get the opportunity to move down, pick up another pick in a later round, you could still get Jefferson or a guy like T. Higgins at 21 or later. I think the Eagles are in a great position. You already got your cornerback and your secondary address. You got a star corner. You get Darby back. You fill in a safety spot with Jalen Mills. Even though a legend like Malcolm Jenkins is leaving, you've got a secondary that's a force to be reckoned with. Your D-line is still your strength. I think receiver and inside linebacker later on, depth at the O-line, and where the Eagles need to target in those first three rounds.
Coffee Jones joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. What do you make of the approach by Howie Roseman when you look at the way that the offseason has gone so far, knowing that at this point, the way that I see it is that he's almost telegraphed that you're going to take a wide receiver. And I know that you're looking at Amari Cooper and some of these other deals. I'm looking at DeMarcus Robinson. I'm looking at Brashad Perryman. I'm looking at Robbie Anderson, guys who didn't get, you know, the whole bag. And I do wonder if Howie Roseman painted himself into a corner a little bit with what he's going to have to do in this draft.
I think he did, but I think if you ask any draft expert, the guys that are the deepest in this year's draft is the wide receiver position. So this is something that the Eagles are kind of in a great spot at 21. There's going to be some teams that are going to be calling Howie Roseman and seeing if they can move up to the spot to get their guy, whether it be a wide receiver or any other position. I think they're in a great position right now to just sit there and hold tight. You'll be able to get a great guy then. And looking at the depth in this class, we talked about Chenault, you know, these guys that go in to the second round, you're going to be able to find some guys that'll have some Pro Bowl caliber potential in the second round or later because this draft is so deep at wide receivers. So you don't really have to panic or rush. You can pick up two quality guys with your first two picks with either Eagles.
Coffee Jones joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Coffee, let's talk quarterbacks if that's okay with you. I know that Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa are getting a ton of attention at the top. I've started to wonder myself if the number one pick might be for sale. Do you think that it is? And if so, should Miami be interested and should they be trying to get up there?
Miami's in an interesting spot because they've made a lot of moves in this offseason. They still got a high pick in the draft, and they got an opportunity. If they're in love with a guy like Joe Burrow, I think they can go make that move because they've got some assets that they can use to move up to that spot. If they fall and they trust the medical situation with a guy like Tua Tagovailoa, they can still go with that opportunity. And their biggest gift in this offseason was a guy named Tom Brady moving down to Tampa and getting out of the division. So the AFC is going to be wide open. Everybody's going to be trying to make moves to right now supposedly catch Buffalo, a team that's already put itself in playoff position to be the kings of the AFC East. I think right now Cincinnati's in a good position to where I don't think one quarterback, one position is going to solve their problems. They're going to be in a 2 to 3 year rebuild. I think if they got an opportunity to where they like a certain quarterback or another player, they maybe move down a spot, pick up a couple extra picks, and let that number one pick go because, you pick up Joe Burrow, you're still probably going to be drafting in the top three again next year. And looking at the guys that are coming out, the kid down at Clemson, everybody's salivating all over Justin Fields. I mean, there's some quarterbacks coming in the future that Cincinnati could start to build their roster around because they got a lot of holes to fix. I think that could be up for sale, Joe.
Coffee Jones joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Coffee, before I let you go, I just wanted to get your general thoughts on maybe a player that you like, your favorite player in the draft, and somebody, maybe a position that people aren't looking at as well, based on the people that you've looked at and where maybe a hidden impact maker might be.
I mean, I already talked about CeeDee Lamb at the wide receiver position. Another guy at wide receiver that I think a lot of people are sleeping on is T. Higgins. He's a guy from Clemson that a lot of people were looking forward to his pro day, that he's not going to be able to run physically in front of the scouts. He's going to probably maybe do it online and try to tape it and record and see if they can get to 40 times. But the plays that he's made over his career at the Clemson University, two national champions, playing in the playoffs every year of his career. He's a big-time player. He's 6'4". And if the Eagles are trying to decide what they're going to do with the big salary cap and the dead cap number that Alshon Jeffery's going to have for this season, if you're looking for a big body 50-50 guy that's going to be there in round two or later, T. Higgins is a guy that I think you could sit back, and if you want to go a different route, maybe pick up another cornerback, an inside linebacker at 21, you can do that. T. Higgins will be there in the second, maybe even the third round, because people don't really know how fast he really is. I think he could be a steal for somebody in the draft that'll be a Pro Bowler that nobody's thinking about outside the first round.
And that's a guy, Coffee, that seems to be sliding down the boards. People don't like that they didn't see him run and stuff like that. So really, really good stuff there and great insights. Coffee, thank you so much for joining us, man. Really appreciate it. And hopefully, you know, the world gets back to normal soon, huh?
Yes, sir. We definitely need it, Joe, and I appreciate it. And hopefully we can get back on in the booth together for some Ivy League football.
Oh, you bet on it. Coffee Jones joining us there on the Comcast Business Hotline. Thank you so much, Coffee. Outstanding job as per usual, and you know, he's in there with Ron Jaworski breaking down the film, and he's looking at prospects and he's figuring out fits. To me, I'm almost sad that we saved that for the end. Higher on T. Higgins than most, huh? I feel like Higgins has been a slider, whereas a guy like Denzel Mims has been a riser based on what he did in the Senior Bowl and at the Combine and everything like that. More explosive athleticism with maybe questionable hands versus T. Higgins, where it almost goes the other way.
Yeah, I would take Higgins before I took Mims.
You would?
Yes.
Okay.
I would not take Higgins before I took Jefferson or obviously any of the top three.
Mm-hmm.
It would probably be Higgins as my sixth receiver.
Number six.
So it'd be those three, Jefferson,
mm-hmm,
and Jalen Reagor.
I am having, when I say so much difficulty finding comps for the people in this wide receiver class. So, so difficult.
I think it's probably pretty fair.
Because there's no Julio Jones body in there. You know what I mean? Like, Julio Jones was T.O. reincarnated. Like, that was really easy to see.
And it's
right?
funny you say that, because the only thing that Judy is missing is the body. He is Julio Jones, everything else.
Yep. So with him, I love the catch radius. He's as good a route runner as Amari Cooper was coming out. Like, there's so... But people are like, who is he? I'm like, I don't know. I don't have a really, really great... I'm having more of a difficulty with CeeDee Lamb, who's Coffee's favorite prospect in the draft. A guy who is not overwhelming physically, but does have the ability to make the explosive play, scores a ton, really good separation. Not as good at separation, as far as I'm concerned, as Judy is, but very good separation. I still don't know who he, like, it's, okay, who's CeeDee Lamb? If I watch the NFL, who's CeeDee Lamb? I don't know. Like, LaVisca Chenault, he's the only one that I've come up with the comp for, and it's Le'Veon Bell. Like, that's, you know what I mean? It's insane, this wide receiver class. There's a lot to like. There's a whole lot to like. But I am really, really having difficulty pulling you know, player comps together.
I think there's a lot of comps where you can go, okay, these four aspects of their game are this guy, but the one thing that they don't have is making them not this guy.
Right.
Like, CeeDee Lamb to me is Odell Beckham,
okay,
but not as strong.
Yep.
I think they do everything else pretty similarly.
I agree. All right, that's not bad. You know, what else you got? Like, so, perfect one. Like, a guy like Justin Jefferson, right? You're like, okay, he does a lot of, like, A.J. Green stuff. He does a lot of A.J. Green type stuff. But not as good at high pointing the football as AJ Green was. You know, route running might be a shade under where AJ was coming out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's normally I'm able to like put it together pretty well. Like, so Calvin Johnson comes out, right? And he's like the size speed wide receiver. And I'm like, all right, Demaryius Thomas is like discount that guy. And then Stephen Hill was an even steeper discount, as long as we're going with Georgia Tech wide receivers. You know, you can find ways. Are they over the middle types? Are they burners? Are they? It's tough, man. It's a really good, interesting class.
I got to find you the NFL's comp for Laviska Shenault, because you give us Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
I got to give you a receiver. I don't know who it is.
I don't know either. Le'Veon Bell was going to be the... If you could have picked him as a number two wide receiver coming out.
Probably. Yeah, I'm sure you probably could have.
They're the same size.
Here is NFL.com's comparison. Floor, Greg Little. Ceiling, Sammy Watkins.
Okay. All right. So Greg... But I don't even know how similar I think Greg Little and Sammy Watkins were coming out.
I liked Watkins coming out of school a lot more than I liked Shenault.
Yeah, well, Watkins was so clearly the best wide receiver prospect, quote-unquote, coming out of Clemson. And then injuries kind of derailed things early on. I don't know. Then again, I like, you know, as long as we're talking Clemson receivers, I like Mike Williams coming out decisively more than I like
much,
Watkins.
Much more.
So, I don't know. What other NFL comp?
I'll pull you Judy's now.
Yeah, I want Judy's comp.
Problem is, you got to scroll through. Their comp is Santonio Holmes.
Okay. All right, fine.
I think he's better than Santonio Holmes.
Really?
I do.
I really like Santonio Holmes.
I think he was a tremendous player. I think Judy is, if we're being fair and honest, I think Judy's the most complete receiver to come out of the draft since... I mean, it's not that far of a stretch since Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, Ridley was ready.
I think Judy's just as ready.
I think so, too.
And I think this time next year, we're going to be going, you know who the most ready player is? The best ready receiver?
Chase.
Well, either him or Smith from Alabama, his running mate.
So is this insane? Alabama wide receivers never make my list. And you know what list I'm talking about. If you don't know, I have taken on a challenge where I think that I could build a team full of just players from one position group per school. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Alabama's turned out a ton of really good receivers.
An insane amount of really good receivers.
And you never think of it. Man, oh man.
Would you take Alabama or Ohio State?
I'd take Alabama or Ohio State.
Because you figure... Ohio State has Michael Thomas, of course.
Michael Thomas, yep.
Ted Ginn would make that team.
Yes.
Probably as the third receiver. Is there somebody in between the two of them?
Best Ohio State wide receivers. I know I'm missing somebody obvious. Right now, I definitely like... and you mean like recent past, right?
Yeah, yeah. We're not talking all time.
Santonio Holmes.
There you go.
But... Alabama's list is definitely better. Like, Julio Jones is the best receiver in that group. I don't like Amari Cooper, so he wouldn't make my list, but people could put Amari Cooper
on there.
He
wouldn't be your third? Like, you could go Ridley 2 and then him 3?
So, wasn't there another? No, maybe not. Maybe I'm thinking that there are too many. So, is Judy better than Amari Cooper?
I don't know. I would say coming out, probably not.
Okay. All right.
But I could view Judy as having a better NFL career.
Than Amari Cooper?
Yes, but I think coming out of the out into the NFL draft, no, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Speaking of which, we got to get to this. Maybe we'll talk about it next. I really don't like Amari Cooper. I love him compared to Rex Ryan. Holy smokes. We'll get to that next. 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Happy Sunday to you. Hanging out on a Sunday with you. I want to remind you, of course, that small businesses are the backbone of our local communities, and right now, they could use our help. Introducing 97.5 The Fanatic's Operation Shop Local. Our initiative is set up to encourage gift card purchases from your local business and to highlight those offering home delivery or curbside pickup. Business owners, go to 975thefanatic.com and list yours in our free directory. The Fanatic is promoting this for our listeners to review and patronize whenever possible. Operation Shop Local, because we are all in this together. From the Beasley Media Group and 975 The Fanatic. It does pain me, by the way, to see what's happening with T. Higgins. Because as a big Clemson fan, I have loved so many wide receivers that have come through Clemson. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the noise surrounding T. Higgins is correct. I don't know about the noise surrounding Amari Cooper from Rex Ryan, who appeared on Get Up, and he had me. Rex had me for like 70% of this, and then lost me. Here's what he said.
Well, I agree with Dan on the fact that I wouldn't have paid this guy. To me, this is the biggest disappearing act in the National Football League. He doesn't show up on the road. He doesn't show up against, when the competition's good, when he's against the top corners, that guy disappears. And to me, he reminds me, it's only one time that I can remember in recent memory on elite receivers and disappearing acts like Amari Cooper. That was the kid that the Raiders had a few years ago. Oh, that's right. That was Amari Cooper. This is who he is. And Dan, he doesn't love football. Hell with it. He stops his routes. He does all this. I wouldn't have paid this turd.
Whoa. He goes turd on him? Look. He's objectively correct about some things, right? You know how I talk about the Amari Cooper disappearing act all the time? Tyler Zuli, he's right in that I have the game log up. I didn't even put together that it's the road games. I didn't even realize, but that's correct. That is actually what happens in Amari Cooper's game logs. However, going personal on it, that was a different level to me, man. And this is coming as probably the person who is screaming the most, Amari Cooper's the most overrated receiver, and then was doing backflips when he got the $100 million contract from Dallas. He's getting pushback on this, and justifiably so, man. He went personal on this.
Yeah, he went over the top on it. You can have your opinions, and I think a lot of times, so like we as local sports talk show hosts can say things like this because it riles up the Philadelphia fan base. But you're on a national stage, on a national show, where you know this is getting back to him. Yeah. Things that I say are not going to get back to Amari Cooper. Things that Rex Ryan says are going to get back to Amari Cooper. And this is over the top to go at him like that. I think he's right. I agree with you. I wouldn't have paid Cooper either. I'm closer to thinking he's a good receiver than you are, but it's a little over the top.
See how he does, how he did last year against good corners. Let's just assume that he got shadowed the whole time. He got shut out against the Patriots. Did he play in that game? He did play in that game, yeah. 0 catches, 0 yards.
So that was Stephon Gilmore
locking
him down.
You assume that's Gilmore,
yeah.
Yep. Let's see. Rams week 15, that was at home. Now, they blew the Rams out, so you didn't need Amari Cooper to go off in that game. But 1 catch for 19 yards, I'm assuming Jalen Ramsey drew that duty. Tre'Davious White, he had 8 for 85 at home against Buffalo. It's a mixed bag against elite corners, right? I mean, you get White for 8 for 85 if White was guarding him.
Did they win that game?
They did. No, no, they lost.
There you go.
26-15. They lost. Yeah, so you're chucking from behind. Minnesota doesn't have any elite corners.
Xavier Rhodes not an elite corner?
No.
Mike Hughes not an elite corner?
No.
Oh, okay, I'm out.
That's all you got? I'm looking for corners that are still on Minnesota's roster for 400, Alex.
Survey says,
Exactly. I don't know. Look, I've pointed this out, too, that if I have an elite-level wide receiver, he needs to get me 70 to 75 yards minimum every single game, period. Like, I don't need somebody who can get 300 yards and then gives me 20. That's why Amari Cooper doesn't get my money. But,
well, so you mean to tell me that when it comes to the draft, you don't want a receiver that does that?
I only need consistency.
So what you're telling me is that people telling me I'm crazy for using that exact same argument for Henry Ruggs, I'm not crazy.
So let's see the Henry Ruggs game log to back Tyler up here. Because you are telling me that you think that he could be a like a Marquise Goodwin
boomer bust type guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So let's see. Now, obviously, the NFL is a different story. Oh my. So let's start early in the season. Two catches, 14 yards against Duke, but they won 42-3. I'm assuming that he didn't see a whole lot. Oh, forget this. Let's get into the SEC play. All right. One catch, 11 yards against Ole Miss. One catch, 33 yards against Texas A&M. 4 for 72 against Tennessee. 4 for 47 against Arkansas. 3 for 68 against LSU. 3 for 39 against Mississippi State. 6 for 99 against Auburn in what was definitely his best SEC game of the season. And 2 for 27 against Michigan. Uh-oh. So let me ask you something then. You don't think four catches for 148 yards against Southern Mississippi is good?
Well, and here's my thing, too.
6 for 122 against South Carolina?
In that game against LSU, they scored 41 points and lost.
Yes.
Tua threw for 418 yards.
Yeah.
There is a serious stat discrepancy there.
Mm-hmm. Let's see this this box score real quick. Because who was catching all these? The receiving yards leaders for Alabama.
Devontae Smith had over 200.
7 for 213. Judy, you know, what was the number that I said I had to get for a wide receiver?
75.
5 catches, 71 yards, and a touchdown. Did what he was supposed to do. Right? Close enough. Ruggs, not far off. 3 for 68. No touchdown.
But that's the problem. It's three catches. He had 40 catches this season.
That's not a lot of catches.
40 receptions. He was the third best receiver on that team.
So somebody tweeted in and said that they don't like comps because they're corny and stupid, right? I don't agree. Like, I think if you're like, who's DeSean Jackson? Well, a better example, because this guy's, I think he's a younger player. Let me make sure before I say, because I want to put it in the right order. So I'm looking for a comp for Percy Harvin. DeSean Jackson's a pretty good comp, I would think, for Percy Harvin. You know, Harvin can run the ball better than DeSean Jackson can. But, like, that's why comps exist. They don't have to be perfect, but I can't even get close on a lot of these guys. Except for Le'Veon Bell and Chenault. I feel really good about that one, watching those two go. Watching them run after the catch and stuff like that. Watching their body shapes, their speed, their rolls. I feel good about that
one. And that's why you watch a player like that, that you say, well, oh, he didn't run a 4.3 because he ran a high 4.5.
Right, with a torn
with
core
a torn
muscle.
Hamstring or yeah, whatever quad or whatever it was.
And also being huge. Like
the
being
guy
huge
the guy
man.
Can play. Again, I don't know if I take him at 21, but if it's move up for the second round for him, absolutely.
Well, so the thing about a guy like that is that I anticipate that being on a good team will help, as opposed to some. I think there are players that you look at it and they think, I can help anybody. I can put up numbers anywhere. But there are some teams that need to have better deployment of their players. 610-632-0975 are some players that require better deployment, I should say. We're going to take more phone calls. We're going to take a wrap-up of the show. We're going to put a bow on this one. And that's all coming up next right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Coffee Jones checks in again on, speaking of the shutdown corners versus Amari Cooper. Last game against Darius Slay, 2019. 6 targets, 3 catches, 38 yards. It's the $100 million man in Dallas. Good chunk of that's guaranteed, I think, too. But there you go.
It's good money if you can get it.
It's great work. Great work if you can get it. Oh, man. All right, so we covered a lot of ground here. I've really appreciated the show today. It's been fun. I forgot how much fun it was working on Sundays. Let's get to Joe in Pensauken next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing great. How are you today?
All right. I'm calling because I'm not a big college football fan, but it seems that everybody's automatically take Justin Jefferson to go at 21. And as far as I've seen, he's only lined up at the slot. I don't know. I mean, is that something that concerns you guys?
Well, let me ask you, does it concern you? Because we've seen a lot of players do a ton of damage, even if it were, like, even if just because he only played at the slot at LSU, that means he can only play at the slot at the NFL level. If that's true, we've seen a lot of players dominate from the slot.
It does concern me because I can't remember the last time a first-round wide receiver was drafted exclusively just playing the slot. And, you know, I was just wondering if he could possibly line up anywhere else. I mean, because I haven't really seen that. And most of the scouts are saying that's where he's been most of the time.
Well, he's definitely, he was there a ton at LSU. That's absolutely right. I think that he does have the ability to play on the outside just based on his body and his route running and things like that. But I definitely think, Joe, that that's going to be a question that the Eagles have to evaluate if they're going to spend that pick at 21, because you're right. I mean, you don't often see guys in the first round taken who purely project as slot receivers.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I have my guys that I like. I know, like I said, I don't watch a lot of college football, but I feel that Mims is a talent that's going to be there, and I feel he has more upside. Because he's lined up at the slot. He's lined up outside. He's a bit faster, and he's a bit bigger.
Well, yeah, I mean, Joe, Mims is a fast riser, man. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. He's getting a ton of attention now, even if he didn't before. He did really well at the combine, tested really well. The numbers are really good. I would anticipate that that's a guy that's going to be getting good attention on draft day. Or night, or evening, or whenever they do this. All right, I'm trying to think of who the... I can't think of one first-round slot receiver, but I can think of a ton of super effective slot receivers. Larry Fitzgerald doesn't count. He became a slot receiver, like, after his first career was over, and then decided that he wanted to be the best slot receiver in the NFL, so he's doing that now. But, like, Tyreek Hill... I don't even think Tyreek Hill would have been a first-rounder, even if the other stuff didn't push him down the draft boards. Juju Smith-Schuster went in the second. Keenan Allen went in the third. Obviously, we know the story about Edelman and Thielen. Like, Cooper Kupp didn't go in the first round.
Welker, the same thing.
Yep. So, I mean, he's got a point. Joe's got a point that you're not drafting guys in the slot with your first-round picks. But I do wonder, like... Would you, if you knew what you were getting? Like, I think that if you look at it, like, yeah, you would have drafted Tyreek Hill. You would have drafted Juju Smith-Schuster. Even if those guys aren't playing outside, the production that you're getting is worth the 21st pick in the draft.
Well, and I wonder, too, does size have any influence on it?
What do you mean?
In terms of if you're going to take a slot receiver in the first round or not. Because we talked about Welker and Edelman and... Even Tyreek Hill's not a big guy.
Right.
does Jefferson's size dictate that more than his skill set?
Well, fair enough, because, I mean, there are other big slot receivers that we've seen. Like we mentioned Keenan Allen and Juju and, you know, Tyler Boyd plays in the slot, right? But it's interesting. I do wonder if that's... if that's going
to
be a factor.
You know, not to say that he's a big guy, but he's 6'1 and about 200 pounds.
That's receiver big.
Yeah, that's much bigger than a lot of the other slot receivers we mentioned. But, right, again, you mentioned Keenan Allen, bigger guy. I don't know. I think he's got first-round talent.
So do I. Well, I mean, I talked about this, too, before. Like, Jefferson gave me Ajita watching because I really, really liked him. Like, I watched, and I really... He was a guy who... I have to look at the numbers on this. But based on what Tyler was saying before, Jefferson was the anti-Ruggs. Like, Jefferson was, like, Mr. Production, like, and was always there. Like, was consistently showing up. Now, here's the part where I check the Justin Jefferson game logs and find out how much of a liar I am. But the games that I saw for LSU, it seemed like he was always... And that was with Chase being on the outside. Seemed like he was always there doing stuff.
Well, and the thing is, too, the argument for him is my argument was that, you know, they were featured in an offense that really did sling the ball all over the place, but they spread it out pretty good between, you know, him and Chase and Thaddeus Moss at tight end, and, you know, even Edwards-Helaire had a decent number of pass catches. And then somebody turned it around and said, well, then if that's the case, then Ruggs is 40 is a little misleading. But it goes back to the conversation we had last segment where we talked about the inconsistency. I don't think Jefferson's inconsistent.
So he had two performances all season under 55 yards. He had four catches for 27 yards and a touchdown in a blowout win against Arkansas. And he had two catches for 18 yards and a touchdown in a blowout win at Vanderbilt. Other than that, 9 for 106. In the national championship game. 14 for 227 and four touchdowns against Oklahoma. Wow. In the Peach Bowl. 7 for 115 and a touchdown against Georgia. 6 for 55 against A&M and a score. 4 for 27 against Arkansas. Talked about that. Ole Miss. 9 for 112 and two scores. Alabama. 7 for 79 and no score. Auburn, 7 for 60. Mississippi State, 8 for 89. The production is 100% there. Now, Burrow was throwing the ball a million times. That's totally true. But you're looking at the consistency. You're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games of 100 or more yards. And he didn't score in 1, 2, 3, 4 games. I like Justin Jefferson. I like him a lot. And I think that he's a worthwhile add at 21. I think that he has a chance to be better than several receivers who will be drafted in front of him. I'll put it that way. Want to remind you, of course, as we've been doing the whole time, it's been a really cool thing to do. And we know that lots of us do get the opportunity, the fortunate opportunity to work at home, you know, and stay out of harm's way. However, there are those on the front lines who help to keep our community a safer place day in and day out. They're doctors, nurses, educators, custodians. They are our health heroes. Is there a health hero in your life that you'd like us to recognize? Go to 975thefanatic.com right now to nominate the health hero you would like us to highlight. Check out our webpage, our social media pages, and listen on air every day to see if your health hero will be highlighted. Every health hero we highlight will receive a $50 Dunkin' gift card. We're all in this together. So, yep, that's a really cool thing going on. And make sure that you participate in that and let people know that you know that you're thinking about them and that they are they're important to you. Tyler, did we miss anything today? Is there anything else that we could possibly cover in the next 60 seconds?
I think we've pretty much hit on absolutely everything we could.
That's it.
We talked professional wrestling today.
Man, you did not think you were getting that on this show today. There's no way. We talked backyard baseball.
We did.
We talked about Bonafide, who I'm sure that some of you forgot was in NBA Street. I didn't forget. Zombies ate my neighbors and my mom's gaming habit, which is pervaded to Candy Crush today.
Somebody who was so popular, made up character, they made him a real life wrestler. That's unreal.
I mean, we ran the gamut today. So thank you very much to everybody who called and tweeted in, my co-hosts for the evening. Really appreciated all of your contributions, as well as the sterling efforts by Tyler Zuli. Tyler, I'm stuck with you again next week. Is this
case? All next week, pal.
Here we go, baby. All right. Looking forward
to file for a restraining order by the end of this.
Looking forward to talking to you guys then. Everybody stay safe out there. Thank you so much for listening and for joining us. Stop buying all the toilet paper. It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.